Welcome to Political Point of View on Coast Access Radio 104.7 FM. In this program, we talk with politicians of all types, of all sorts, from local government through to central government, and including aspiring candidates. Sit back and enjoy.
Hello listeners, today is another day of Political Point of View with Graham Priest. Today's guest, Simeon Brown, National MP from Pakuranga in Auckland. Now, Simeon, you're the climate spokesperson for the Nat Party. Could you, in less than an hour, summarise what your thoughts are on the climate change policy that's just been announced?
Yes, well, look, great to be with you again this morning, Graham, and it's good to see the sun shining outside. Look, the government's announcement on Monday around the climate reduction plan was very much a tale of more spin and very little substance. We've got a report with 300 actions tasks that when you actually go in there and have a look at what the actions are, it's working groups, it's reports, it's studies, it's more consultants, it's more bureaucrats, and actually very little action. And the only action that I actually see in there is stuff that's already underway in terms of actual things they're going to deliver.
So that's a fairly concise summary, isn't it? Is there any substance, any real meat that you can get your teeth into?
Well, look, in the transport space of the government's announced they're going to have some sort of scrappage scheme for cars. They've thrown $569 million in it. But look, there's no detail about what cars will qualify, who can qualify for the scrappage scheme. They've said it's going to start with a trial next year of 2,500 cars. And so I guess what I'm seeing here is a lot of talk, but not a lot of action. And so whilst there may be some merit in some of these ideas, what New Zealanders actually want to see when it comes to climate action and reducing our emissions is actual real action on climate change. And I think what we see too often from this government is announcements, very little delivery.
Okay, so you've had no actual detail on the scrappage on cars.
Look, there's no detail in there about the scrappage scheme. All we've got is a press release from the minister saying $569 million. There's no detail around who qualifies, how old the car has to be, how many miles it has to have done on the, or how many kilometres it should may have done, what the income level of the people who want to utilise this should be to be able to qualify. There's none of that detail is available now, and the government's got a lot of work to do to actually get that up and running for their trial next year. And just remember, it's only going to be a trial. Next year will only be a trial before they actually go any further, but $569 million has been allocated to that, which I think is a lot of money for a trial.
Have they actually said whether it's going to be for EVs only or EVs and hybrids or
it sounds like
small
it would only
cars?
Be for EVs. It sounds like it would only be for EVs. But look, there's some real issues here. Even if a low-income family was able to scrap their old car and get $10,000 subsidy for an EV, the minister's saying, well, there's a lot of EVs which are worth under $35,000, but a $35,000 car and then a $10,000 discount is still $25,000. That's a lot of money for a low-income family to purchase a new car. And in fact, I'd say most low-income families would spend around maybe $10,000 on a new car. And so there's a lot of work to be done to actually make a difference.
A big gap.
Yeah.
One of the problems is if you're going to buy an EV I haven't ever seen any advertised that low in the Wellington area. By that stage, the batteries are starting to age a bit, and you're looking at a very substantial amount of money to replace them.
Yeah, there's a lot of work which still needs to be done, and there is a lot of technology which will develop in that space around replacement of batteries and recycling of batteries. That's certainly happening at pace. I'm a big supporter of electric vehicles. I think they really do provide a great way that we can transition from, carbon-emitting vehicles to cleaner vehicles. But look, there are some challenges which also need to be addressed, and the supply of these cars is challenging around the world at the moment. in terms of the amount of raw materials needed to be able to meet demand. But also there's the issue around making sure that they're at a good cost point so that people can actually afford them. And then, of course, solving that issue around recycling of the batteries is the next challenge as well, which I know there's a lot of technology developing in that space.
There was something about housing. What was there?
Something about housing in the in the actual emissions reduction plan?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the thing about this particular plan is it touches, effectively tries to touch on every single area of the economy. And so there's a bit in there about building and construction, where they're looking at trying to reduce the, the environmental impact in that space. But again, it's a lot of working groups and discussion groups and things like this, which, you know, ultimately what New Zealanders want to see is real action, not actually just more working groups. And I think that's what New Zealanders have seen far too much of over the last few years.
And it's a lot of expense as well.
That's right.
There's going to be a requirement for more insulation in homes, but there wasn't anything radical in the way of redesign or rethinking on what actually a house works.
No, I mean, it's good. I mean, National's been very supportive of things which make sure that we get better insulation in our houses to make sure they're more energy efficient and warmer and drier. All of those things provide a range of good outcomes for New Zealanders. But the reality is that we actually need to see real action, not just talk. I mean, if you look at the construction part, the building and construction part of this report, you've got, actions such as identify and explore potential options to address financial barriers to low emission buildings. Well, that sounds like a working group. Recognize and showcase low emission buildings. That just sounds like they're going to have a bit of a talk, show and tell. Explore providing business change advice and support to the construction sector. That's another sort of report writing exercise. Support implementation of government procurement guidelines and rules for buildings. That's just another working group. Convene the climate change government infrastructure and property group. So that's another working group talk fest. Now, these aren't actual actions. These are simply just talk fests and working groups. And ultimately, that might keep bureaucrats busy, but it doesn't actually reduce emissions.
Well, there's a lot of hot air generated generally, isn't there?
Yeah, well, that's the reality. Is, I mean, all these... The government's very good at creating hot air, but actually what we need to do is reduce emissions.
Has the National Party looked at different ways of building? Like, I saw some person in the Auckland area was 3D printing houses at a much lower cost than traditional methods.
Yes, look, we've got a lot of work that we're doing in that space around how we can work alongside the building construction sector. But the point we would make is that the sector is going to drive these outcomes. Everyone wants to reduce emissions in terms of materials, in terms of efficiency, all of those particular things. And so the reality here is the government needs to not just get in the way with working groups and bureaucrats, but actually make sure that the businesses are given the space to be able to develop these things, reduce the regulations, make sure they can actually get things done. That's the biggest inhibitor in New Zealand at the moment in our building construction sector.
Well, of course, one of the problems in the private building sector is getting a mortgage for a non-standard tile house, isn't it?
Absolutely.
They run a mile.
Yep.
You're also... spokesperson for public transport or transport in general. What do you think about that new trial that's going to happen in Tawa, where there's going to be virtually an on-demand bus system?
Look, I think there's, National always supports public transport initiatives which actually make a real difference. One of the things we have to be careful of is not creating things which actually compete with the private sector. And so where you've got companies which are, where you've got the government trying to create services which are already being provided by the public, by the private sector, there's actually very little benefit to the taxpayer and it doesn't actually drive efficiency. And so you've got to be careful to make sure that whatever's actually done isn't just doubling up with what's already available and competing with what's already available, work alongside, support and make sure that the regulatory environment is there so that there is the ability for the private sector to step in and actually do something, that's actually got to be a good starting point.
One of the things that doesn't seem to have been covered as far as I can see, and I haven't been able to study it in any great depth, is the coal-fired electricity generation for peak. We're still using pretty dirty coal from Indonesia, and yet there's a possibility that we could have been using much less polluting natural gas. Is there any sense in that?
Look, National's been very critical of the government's anti-oil and gas policies that they have been putting forward, reducing the amount that's available to be able to use. The reality is natural gas is an opportunity to be able to cut emissions from coal, because it is less carbon intensive and it's a transitionary fuel that can be used to reduce emissions in the interim whilst we transition to obviously even lower emission energy. So it doesn't make sense in this regard to be effectively stopping the exploration of oil and gas and then having to import the coal from Indonesia, and not only importing dirty coal, but having to ship it here in big ships using enormous amounts of fuel does not make sense. So this is where the government's policies actually aren't supporting the reduction in emissions. In fact, they're increasing the amount of emissions that we are producing in the country.
Well, of course, the fuel that those bulk tanker-type ships use is actually pretty damn dirty stuff.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So this is where you've actually got to make sense. The policy has to make sense, and it's not going to be ideological, which is where this government constantly comes
from. Well, the other problem with burning that type of coal is the amount of sulphur dioxide that's generated, and also the amount of particulate that's discharged into the atmosphere. It's pretty gruesome stuff. GE, surely that's got some future in reducing dairy emissions through what the cows eat and how they digest it.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of work which needs to be done around how we reduce emissions from cows, and I think we National is very supportive of what was announced on Monday around that particular area. I think we can be world-leading in technology in that space, and so that's an area where we say actually the investment there does make sense. We don't want to just simply go and cull the cows, which is what the Green Party and elements of the Labor Party want to do. We actually want to maintain our economic opportunities and maintain our economic growth and our ability to sell to the world food, which is what the world needs, whilst also investing in innovation and technology, which will ultimately drive down emissions.
The methane from cows' digestive system is what causes the problem. So is methane normally a breakdown product of grass, or is it bacterial in the cow's gut?
I'm not a technical expert in all things methane, unfortunately. But you'd have to ask a farmer that one.
I'm not sure a farmer would be able to tell you. it's a fairly complex process, but it would seem to me that if it's simply bacteria that's helping break down the vegetable matter, that changing the cow gut flora could alter it quite radically. Anyway, the thing is that it has been proven that some GE-modified grass could make quite a difference in that regard. But there seems to be a total horror at the thought of using any GE product.
Well, look, there is no discussion. I think there's an opportunity for a discussion in that area, and I think technology certainly will play a role, but we've got to make sure we develop the best technology and make sure that it's looked at and tested and investigated properly in that space.
You're also in the a spokesperson for government departments and inefficiencies. How do you think the Ministry of Health is doing of late?
Well, I think if you look across the public sector at the moment, we've seen enormous growth in the number of staff. There's been a growth from about 46,000 public servant, core public servants, up to about 61,000 public servants. An increase in the amount we're paying in salaries for core public servants from $3.5 billion per year to $5 billion per year. So what we're seeing is substantial growth across the public sector, but we're not seeing the outcomes that New Zealanders actually need. And if you look at the Ministry of Health, we're seeing the government going in there in the middle of a pandemic, go and effectively restructure the entire health sector at a time when actually what we need is good outcomes. We need to fix the waiting list for cancer treatment. We need to fix the waiting list for operations and elective operations, which are well behind. There's tens of thousands of waiting for elective operations at the moment. These are the problems that New Zealanders actually care about. These are the problems people contact my office about. People don't contact my office and say, oh, I wish there was a Māori Health Authority. Oh, I wish there was a great big mega merger of all the health boards across New Zealand into one big mega entity. What they ring me and talk to me about is, I can't get my operation. I can't get seen by a specialist. These are the actual issues which need to be fixed. But the government's focused on fixing bureaucracy and shifting bureaucracy around rather than actually fixing the real issues which New Zealanders want to see fixed.
Well, one of the problems that I can see that hasn't been addressed is the fact that in 1968 we had a new medical school in Auckland.
Mm.
And since that time our population has doubled. And we've still got the same number of people coming out of the med schools. And quite well-qualified people can't train to become a doctor because there is no space to allow them, so they get discarded. And to me, that just doesn't make sense because for years we've been importing trained doctors and trained surgeons to deal with the problem that's caused by a lack of training. It would seem to me far more sensible to spend money on another med school than a whole raft of changes in the way that the hospitals run.
Yeah, well, there's a massive shortage of, the number of doctors, nurses, some significant challenges in this space which need to be addressed. And unfortunately, all the government's focused on at the moment is simply rearranging, bureaucracy, which is clearly the wrong approach.
Well, even if there were a new school opened, and it would probably take, 3 years to build, it's really nearly 8 years before you see any effect of having people graduate and into the effectively into a trained workforce. So we'd be looking at 11 years from now, at which time what's their population going to be? So it's a backside first way of looking at a problem in my book.
That's right.
However, I'm not a parliamentarian, which is probably just as well. I'd end up with stomach ulcers.
You'd make an excellent politician, Graham.
No, I'm too cynical. How comfortable are you with the Three Waters and Nanai Mahuta sister is in charge of one of the new entities?
Oh, look, I think it's the whole Three Waters program is a sham in terms of what the government is doing there. It's about stripping assets rather than fixing the problem, and I guess it comes back to the similar to what they're doing in the health space. Instead of actually fixing the problem, which is that a small percentage of New Zealand's water needs to be brought up to standard, they instead want to amalgamate and create bureaucracies which will ultimately fail. So National said we will repeal our Three Waters. We don't support the current model, and we want to make sure that it's we want to make sure we actually get the right thing, right outcomes for New Zealanders in terms of our water.
But how sensible is it to allow the sister of the minister to be in charge of one of those branches?
Well, look, I think there's certainly some questions which need to be asked around that in terms of in terms of how that is operating and whether that's appropriate. And I encourage you to ask those questions of your local Labor MP when she's on the show next.
Well, I'd be very happy to if she'd appear, but they're much too busy, both of them, because we're in a fairly unique situation here. We're right in the middle of two electorates, so our population base has got two different MPs. But neither of them are able to allot time to come on our program. However, there is an election next year, so no doubt they'll want time then. How happy are you with Oranga Tamariki?
Look, I think and that's an organisation which was set up a number of years ago, and look, it works with some of the most incredibly challenging young people in New Zealand, and so it is certainly has its challenges. What I would suggest is that we want to make sure that it is delivering the outcomes that New Zealanders need, and you know, I think our spokesperson in that space is certainly doing what can be done to make sure and ask those questions. But with any government department at the moment, we want to see outcomes. That needs to be the focus, not how much money is being spent, which seems to be this government's focus.
Or in the case of the department, the Ministry of Health, there's a very large sum of money being allotted for mental health that has only scratched the surface.
Well, no one knows where it's gone.
Well, theoretically, it's still sitting in a budget, surely, but there's, what, $1.9 billion allotted, and only a very small fraction of that's been actually spent. So why is it allotted, and why hasn't it been spent?
Well, I think this, again, comes back down to the fact that it's very easy to make an announcement, but it's much harder to actually deliver. And what we see here is the government made an announcement that they would fix some of the mental health challenges that we're seeing in New Zealand, which is certainly an issue which needs to be addressed. But there's a real issue around delivery, and some of those delivery issues are challenging. I mean, there's the need to find the right number of staff and the right qualified staff to be able to actually address some of these issues.
So we come back to a lack of medical school.
Well, look, there is an issue in that space around making sure that New Zealand can attract. We're not attracting good people from around the world at the moment because our borders have been shut and the government hasn't been able to open it up fast enough. Immigration in New Zealand is not processing visas fast enough. There's some real challenges around making sure that we're actually attracting the best from the world and not just losing the best to the world, which I think is what we're going to be seeing a lot more of over coming months. I mean, every time I walk down the main street of my main town centre in Howick in my electorate, someone comes up to me and says, I'm thinking of moving to Australia. That's another loss to our country. And that means we're losing skilled people rather than gaining and attracting good skilled people. We've always been the envy of the world with people coming here who want to have the lifestyle and the, you know, the natural environment and all the things New Zealand has to offer. But it seems to me that we're going to be losing the best and the brighter to other countries which pay more and look after these people better than we are at the moment.
I've watched Q&A with the Minister of Immigration, Chris Farfoy, which was distinctly unimpressive, I felt. There's an enormous backlog of processing of work visas. What's the reason behind that?
What's the reason for that? I think it's just the fact that they have not been able to actually get their systems in place. They've been working from home, and they haven't been actually making sure they've been ready to go. They've gone through a big change in terms of their IT systems recently, and that hasn't worked very well. So there's a range of problems in the immigration space which are real challenges to the immigration system. And the minister's ultimately responsible. He's hired 500 more staff than he had when we left office back in 2017, but processing times across all visa categories have gone backwards. There's some real serious questions there. I know my colleague Erica Stanford's doing a good job holding Chris Farfoy to account on all of those different issues.
But some of the visas are taking upwards of a year or more to actually process.
Well, Well, exactly. It's frankly embarrassing for us as a country. How are we going to attract the best and the brightest to New Zealand if they can't get a visa?
So what's the solution?
Well, the solution is making sure Immigration New Zealand is actually focused on delivering visas and processing visas rather than constantly going through an immigration reset, which the government's been putting immigration policy settings through over the last 2 years. That's just a working group constantly trying to rethink what our immigration policies. It is sensible to look at what immigration settings and policies we need, but the number one policy that's needed right now is processing visas, because we haven't been doing that for the last 2 years. Our borders are now open, and that should be their number one focus, is processing visas of people who want to come and work in New Zealand.
What's your opinion of the sudden disappearance of Louisa Wall?
Oh, look, I think she was someone who was very outspoken, and she was someone who certainly had her own opinions in the Labor Party, and that was, you know, good. But the reality is she wasn't liked by her colleagues, and so they wanted to get rid of her, which effectively that's what they did.
What was your thought when the PM didn't turn up for a valedictory?
Oh, look, I think that speaks volumes of the relationship between the two, doesn't it?
I thought it was extremely disrespectful, but that's as a layperson, not
as a
parliamentarian.
Well, you have to ask the Prime Minister her thoughts when she's next on your show.
Well, again, she's far too busy. or perhaps I'm too kind.
Be kind, Graham.
Yes. So what do you think of her getting that plum job to traipse around the very pleasant Pacific Island?
Well, it's a very cushy job and a good way for the Labor Party to have got rid of someone they didn't like. I think that's exactly what they did. But I'm sure Louisa Wall would do a great job. She's a very effective person, and I'm sure she'll do a great job in that particular job.
Well, from what I could see, she was a real go-getter. With some, you know, some practical thought and common sense. Another rather odd behaviour, Matthew Tukaki. He changed a contract illegally after he was no longer chairman of a trust. How did that come about, do you think? Sloppy management, or?
I'm not across the detail of that particular issue, unfortunately, Graham.
There was one heck of a lot of money involved.
I did see the headline, but not quite across the detail of that one, unfortunately.
Right. Would you have thought there should have been some method of looking over large contracts that in that way? Because it was just signed across.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think we want to make sure the government's delivering on its outcomes and not wasting taxpayers' money. That's very important.
There's something like $1 million involved. It might be chump change as far as Parliament's concerned, but in real terms, it's real money.
Oh, exactly. Couldn't agree more. It's a bit like those two red zeros that Michael Wood had out the other day, which cost $10,000.
Okay, what can you tell me about the new electric ferry that Auckland's going to have?
Look, I don't know much about the details. It seems to be a bit of a murky deal that's been done between the government and Auckland Transport. There's already a ferry operator in Auckland called Fuller's Ferry, which operates the ferry services. They're already developing hybrid and electric options. But this deal has been done on the side, and I'm not sure exactly why they haven't been working with Fuller's to support them, rather than effectively going off and doing their own deal to the side. So, look, lots of questions need asking about that particular issue, which I'm currently doing.
The one in Wellington's been operating for a few months now, so...
Yeah, and look, we're all for electric ferries. I think that's fantastic. It's a great way to reduce emissions and provide a smoother, quieter service for people who want to travel on ferries. But at the same time, there's some questions which need to be asked around how that particular deal was done.
Okay, Simeon, we'll catch up with you again next month. It's been great to talk to you.
Thank you, Graham.
This has been another session of A Political Point of View with Graham Priest. Today's guest, Simeon Brown, NAT MP for Pakuranga. Thank you for listening.
You have been listening to Political Point of View on Coast Access Radio 104.7 FM. In this program, we've talked with politicians of all types, of all sorts, from local government through to central government and including aspiring candidates.
This program is made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.